Good evening and welcome aboard Flight CKCO TV Channel 13 to Resolute, Eureka, Rankin Inlet, Ferguson Lake Lodge and Williams Gold Mine. Today's entertainment is, what happens on the road, stays on the road. So sit back and enjoy. The drink cart will be around shortly.
My name is Gary McLaren. I joined CKCO TV in 1957 after 3 years at a radio station in Hamilton. At CKCO, I did almost everything. General announcer, voiceover, news director, assignment editor, and finally, my last 10 or 12 years as the host and producer of a two-hour Sunday morning program called Sunday AM. Quite often back in the 1980s and 90s, reporters and announcers had the opportunity to go on domestic or foreign trips free of charge, freebies as they were known. One of the first was in the 1960s or early 1970s. That one was to Austria as a guest of the Austrian Chamber of Commerce. I went with photographer John Donahue. Among the places we visited was a glass-blowing factory where they made fine goblets, drinking glasses and the like, and as well a medieval museum of military arms. And we rode in gondolas up a ski hill at a ski resort, and finally flew home from Zurich in Switzerland on an Air Canada flight because one of the group of visitors was an Air Canada PR man, and he got us onto a non-stop flight back to Toronto in first class. There were about 6 or 8 of us in first class, which wasn't very busy, and the lone man there, we finally drove him back to the cabin, cattle class, because we made so much noise. And I still have a few of those hand-blown glass goblets from the glass-blowing plant in Austria. On another occasion, a few years later, my wife and I went to Germany as guests of the German Chamber of Commerce. Apparently the chamber at that time likely wanted to show off to the world how the country was recovering from the Second World War. We were guests of the main German Chamber of Commerce. And while there, I visited and toured the Mercedes factory, went to the cathedral in Cologne, and saw the remnants of the bombing damage, visited a huge cooperative winery, enjoyed a wine tasting, and I learned to my regret that one is not supposed to swallow all the various wines you are tasting. However, no photographer along on that trip, just a pleasure jaunt. I have no idea why I was invited along on that trip, just a pleasure jaunt. It included a train trip from Heidelberg to Munich, then on to Berlin, where I saw the wall, attended a symphony orchestra performance there. There were still many evidences of the wartime bombage to buildings and city infrastructure. Then we went to Frankfurt, and another guide who is fluent in 5 languages, unfortunately English was not one of his better languages. Finally, back to Bonn and the flight home. The German Chamber of Commerce at that time was apparently quite free when it came to handing out freebies. My first notable trip to Canada's north was in 1977 with friend and photographer Ron Gowing to film and follow the work of a team of Navy divers looking for the 2 lost ships, Erebus and Terror, of the Sir John Franklin expedition. Ron Gowing acted as photographer. He was also an officer with the Canadian Reserve Air Force. We flew from Downsview in Toronto to Edmonton, from there via Hercules aircraft to Gladman Point on King William Island. Now, the gravel airstrip on the island was partly on an upslope, so the Hercules had a very hard landing. It was the pilot's first trip to King William Island, hence the hard landing. From there, the party flew on to the O'Reilly Islands, just west of the Adelaide Peninsula and southwest slightly from King William Island. We used single-engine Otter aircraft on wheels and floats to fly from Gladman Point to Dewline Station to the O'Reilly Islands. We intended, when I say we, I mean the Navy divers intended to dive on the west side of the O'Reilly Islands, which was sort of open water and part of the regular shipping lanes. But ice coming down the Wellington Channel prevented that, so the divers had to be content with diving behind the shelter of the O'Reilly Islands, and of course they found nothing. But I often wondered if we had, or they had been able to dive as originally hoped, that they may have found one or both of Franklin's ships, the Erebus and the Terror. The single-engine Otter aircraft was based really at a town called Spence Bay. It's probably renamed into an Inuit name now. But in Spence Bay, we met Ernie Lyle. Now, he was originally a Hudson's Bay Company employee who married an Inuit woman, went to live on the land as an Inuit for many years. Finally, he said he got too old to stand the cold, and he moved back into Spence Bay as the game warden. And the day that I met Ernie, he was looking out over the harbor where a narwhal had surfaced, and some of the Inuit from the community were in their motorboats traveling around the harbor in a circle and shooting every time the narwhal surfaced. And Ernie said, "Somebody's going to get killed out there." But they didn't. Somebody shot the narwhal and it sank, so nobody got it. Anyhow, he wrote a book called An Arctic Man, which I have, which detailed his life as an Inuit. A very interesting man. He's probably dead by now. On another trip to the Arctic, I flew with photographer John Arias to Iqaluit, and then on to Resolute, then to the weather station at Eureka and on Ellesmere Island. It was early September. Ice was forming on the fjord, early 1980s. This was a flight for the declaration making Lake Hazen on Ellesmere Island a national park reserve. Now, the federal minister responsible was the lead person on that trip, and it was cold. Two Inuit men were only wearing light jackets and baseball caps, while Photog, John Arias, and I were in parkas, and so on. So was everyone else in the party. We had stopped on the flight into Resolute, 20 below. A government PR person on the plane was Elizabeth May, later to become leader of Canada's Green Party. Now, the federal minister of the environment detoured from Eureka on the return trip to Edmonton instead of Iqaluit and Ottawa, so we had a red-eye flight back to Ottawa and Toronto, and the plane at that time ran out of everything, soft drinks, booze, food, and so forth. Another trip north was to Rankin Inlet on the northwest side of Hudson Bay, then by twin-engine Otter to Ferguson Lake, about 100 miles west of Rankin on the tundra. The trip was organized by Toronto artist Ken Kirkby. Dan Bailey was the photographer on that jaunt, and we stayed at Ferguson Lake Lodge, which was mainly for fishermen. Keith Sharp, owner and proprietor, a big, burly, bearded man that Dan Bailey christened Sharpie. There were a half dozen or so other guests there. Fishing was fabulous. Dan, Sharpie, and I went out one day, caught a lake trout on almost every cast, 5 to 6 pounds. At one point, we made 3 casts and no fish, and Sharp said, "We've spooked them, boys." So we moved a quarter of a mile away and resumed catching 5 to 6 pound lake trout on almost every cast. Sharpie had built the lodge on an old mining exploration camp. He hauled everything in from Churchill by bulldozer train, and some of the mining operation remnants were still there. A few tanks, large tanks containing a bit of diesel and gasoline. And Sharpie was quite the character, big burly guy, and he had quite a history, which we won't go into at the present time.
We interrupt our program to say dinner will be served shortly. Please have your food tray ready. Your options are Bannockburn smoked salmon, Yukon bison burger, or seared onglet steaks with roasted potatoes. We now return to Gary McLaren and what happens on the road stays on the road.
One day at Ferguson Lake, two people went down from the lodge at 9 o'clock in the morning, down the rapids at the end of the lake into the Ferguson River, came back to the lodge at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and by then they'd caught and released 100 lake trout and then quit counting. So at that time, we also went down Ferguson Lake to the Scotty, the old Scotty fishing camp, and met Joan Scotty and her family, brother, mother. Her father was a white man called Scotty, and he had two or three Inuit wives and a passel of children. And they lived in Baker Lake at that time, but they, in the summertime on Ferguson Lake, lived in wooden plywood shacks, and in the wintertime in igloos, which she said were much warmer than the plywood shacks. I interviewed Joan Scotty. She was a very well-spoken and educated lady, and she said she couldn't understand why Ottawa wouldn't recognize that the land thereabouts was Inuit land, not the government land. So it was rather an interesting speculation. She and her family were out visiting the old homestead, as it were, and it was quite an interesting visit with her and her. She spoke English, her daughter spoke English very well. Her brother spoke no English whatsoever, and the rest are older members of her family, no English at all. But they lived in Baker Lake, where after the government had moved the Inuit off the land into settlements. Later on, among our freebies was a gold mine, the Williams Gold Mine, north of Lake Superior. Went there with a group of local businessmen and stockbrokers. We went down 5,000 feet in a matter of seconds, watched how they hauled the ore out and blasted the rock out of the drifts, and watched them haul the ore to the surface, and went into the mine processing plant where they poured gold bricks, and they were heavier than you'd think. And I wondered, you know, just outside the building where they poured the gold brick, there was a door which led out to the parking lot. And I thought, well, it's quite easy for somebody to come in and grab a brick and get away. And the mine manager said, where's he going to go? There's one road in, one road out. No place to go. They never even worried about it. Another time we visited a gold mine in the Agnico Eagle area in the Rouen region of Quebec, again with a group of local businessmen. I don't know how those two flights were organized, but they were free for our TV guys, with John Arias again as the photographer. At the La Ronde mine, we watched them drill the face of the tunnel, blast out the rock. We had a color show, as it were, and watched the difference between gold ore rock and just plain rock. We could hardly tell the difference, but the lady geologist, who was actually from Cambridge, Ontario, pointed out the difference, which was not really visible to us in our naked eye. However, we had good fun and an interesting trip. You know, they take you down in about 5,000 feet in 1 minute or so. It's a little headstrong. In 1990s, early, John Arias and I went to Holman on Victoria Island. The community is now called Ulahakatok. It was an Inuit community, really started by a Hudson Bay Post years before. About 400 people lived there. And we went to there for the world's most northerly annual golf tournament. Billy Joss, a former Hudson Bay Company factor, started the tournament years before. The golf course was laid out on the tundra about a half mile from the town. There were oiled sand greens. The course was free, no green fees, no clubhouse. Many Inuit displays played regularly, including the news editor of the local paper. On the seventh hole, I got rather lucky, closest to the pin. My ball ended up 12 and a half feet from the pin. and I won a return trip, air trip, from Holman to Yellowknife. Really of no use to me, so I gave the prize, on the advice of Rennie Bornowski, the recreation director, and an official from the Edmonton Oilers hockey team, Randy Gregg. They suggested I give it to a local guy named Colin Okina, whose wife was down in Yellowknife expecting a baby. And he couldn't afford to go down to visit her, so he was really amazed. And later, he was going to phone her, and I said, no, just go on down and visit her. But he didn't do that. He phoned her, and of course she had the child half a day later, so he didn't use the flight. And he traded that flight to someone else for a snowmobile so he could go fox trapping the next winter. And as a prize, or to me, he carved two narwhals, which he sent to me several months later, and which I treasure, really. That was quite the trip, from Edmonton to Coppermine, then on to Ulahakatok. Rennie Bornowski, who was the recreation director at Holman when I was there, went to Cambridge Bay, then to the mainland and Fort McMurray, and finally to the Edmonton area. Now he's a real estate salesman in Edmonton. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, Sunday AM was recorded, and then I made a copy available to the Department of National Defense, and they sent the tape to the Canadian warship serving at that time in the Gulf of Arabia, so the sailors could get some sort of a taste of home each week with a two-hour program of Sunday AM. And as a result, I got a very nice picture from the Department of National Defense of a destroyer in the Persian Gulf going full bore. Anyway, it was an interesting time when I retired in 1996, a little early. It was after a very eventful tour of duty in radio and television, and I think I was there for probably, along with others of my generation, the best of times.
This is the captain speaking. We have started our descent into Whitehorse. We'd like to thank Gary McLaren and what happens on the road stays on the road. We hope you'll fly with us again.